Off the Ball, GAA.
So you've got Garrod O'Connor, you've got O'Mara, you've got really good players coming in, right? I mean, really good players, not just okay players.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Settle in.
On Off the Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
All right, you're welcome along. It is our latest episode of Settle In, brought to you by Guinness 0.0. And I'm delighted to be joined by Tammy and Nat Nguyen, who are two of Ireland's most successful sporting siblings. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Though I should just tell the listeners that off air, we've just been rowing about what your name actually is right now, Tammy.
Yes. It's Tam Nguyen Goff. And he was like, since when did you change that? I was like, that's been my name.
I didn't know that. On the passport, it's a little bit different, but okay.
Yeah, so we had to go off the passport because obviously I had the passport before I got married. But obviously now that when you check into accreditation, you have to go off your name, off your passport, okay, isn't it? So now I'm got nothing to do with the
sport. Now the sporting career
anymore.
Is done.
Yeah,
you're going to go double barreled.
Yeah. I don't know. Yes. Wait, we'll see. My passport's up next year.
Yeah, you didn't seem too pleased with this development.
I'm totally okay. Whatever my sister wants to do is great. But this is the first time me hearing it.
Okay.
Tammy Nguyen Goff. And it was Tammy Goff. It was Tammy Nguyen. Now it's...
I change all the time.
Do you get to spend much time together?
Recently, a lot.
We're spending too much time lately.
Yeah,
a bit too much.
And then...
Could be a bit of tension by the end of this.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What's the age difference?
Oh, four years.
She's 96 and I'm born 2000.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think that's bad of an age group. Her kids are like two years, so I think that's even better, right?
Yeah.
So they can kind of go to school with each other. We couldn't really go to school with each other like that.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's the reason why Tammy had her kids quite young. Well, not young.
But closer.
Closer together.
Yeah.
So they can have a little bit more brotherly... sisterly relationship, I guess.
What was your relationship like when you were young? Would you be at each other all the time? The normal stuff?
Yeah, we wouldn't be at each other the way Lily and Mark is. Like, Lily and Mark are my kids. They would, like, full-on hit each other all the time, and they love each other, and they hit each other, and it's normal, right? But I don't think we had that sort of, because I was a bit older than you, but I remember we had a scrap before.
Yeah.
You would always have, I guess, a scrap, but I think, especially because Tammy obviously came to Ireland first, and I think, for me personally, I think that's got a huge impact on our relationship growing up, because I didn't have a sister for four, six years at the start of my life.
You never said you missed me.
Right.
I was like,
no, I never said I missed Tammy. That's probably why we don't get in that much fights or something, because maybe we're, I don't know, a little bit
too
disconnected
far apart.
Because,
okay.
Yeah.
6 years not knowing that you kind of had a sister. I knew that I had a sister, that type of thing. So now to finally meet my sister when I moved to Ireland was kind of like building that relationship again, rather than from Vietnam when we were younger, right? I think if you kind of really...
So let's go back to that then, because listen, you end up both being so successful and you go to the Olympics twice in badminton, you end up in Ireland's first ever European medalist in weightlifting. You're what age, Tam, when you leave Vietnam?
I can't remember exactly. Like, I've never actually properly done the math. I think I was six or seven or something.
So yeah, have you memories of living in Vietnam?
Kind of, very brief, like very, very small. I remember like we were just living normal and we never had the best of anything. We were pretty poor, weren't we, like, in Vietnam?
Compared to what we have, compared to the normal life you would have in Ireland, we didn't really have much in Vietnam, and we couldn't really do much unless you get really good at school and then you go down, become a doctor or become a solicitor or a lawyer, that type of thing. That's the route. Very difficult to have another route to change, to go up in the ladder.
You're so young. Yeah. So maybe it's very hard to go back to there. But did you realize at the time what what else was out there in the world, or was this just, this was just normal, this is what everyone around you was going through?
No, we've never even met a, like a white skinned person before. The first time I've ever seen anybody that's outside of non-Asian was stepping into the airport. And I was like, what the hell is it? Like, what's going on here, you know? And that, we don't know anything. The first time I've ever been on an airplane or seen an airplane, or if I ever heard of an airplane, was in a book.
Okay. So you and your dad came?
Yes.
First.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've spoken about it since, when you look back in that time, did he talk to you about why you were going to leave Vietnam, why you were going to leave the rest
really
of the family behind?
I briefly remember my mom just says, you're going to another place. This will be better for your life. Just go. My mom was fully convinced that she will never see me again. Mm-hmm. She said that. She was fully convinced that she will never see me again. Because back then, you didn't have internet.
Mm.
How are you going to communicate? She was expecting that she will never see me again. I don't know why she thought that. But she moved. She said, just go. You look after your dad. Your dad will look after you. You will have the best life. I know, looking back now.
That must have a huge impact, long-lasting impact on your mother. Like, you know, I have a six-year-old. The thought of her going across the world, not knowing if you're ever going to see her again. It's impossible to even fathom.
A couple of weeks back when I was lying in bed and me and Mark was there and I was saying, like, oh my God, thoughts now of... I was saying to Mark, would you move to a different country now with Lily and leave me and baby Mark back behind? I started crying because the thought of that, like Lily going abroad with Mark and never seeing like Mark and Lily there again, that would kill me. But putting myself in my mom's shoes, if we're in that much desperate of situation, of course I would let them go.
Mm.
But Mark said no. Mark said, I'm not leaving.
But listen, it's impossible for him to even imagine. It's impossible now for any of us because we're in such a privileged position. But unfortunately, there's still so many people all around the world who are having to make those type
of decisions. And it's maybe one of the, at the start, the hardest, but end up being the best decision for our family and for us. Look at us now.
Yeah.
You know, well, obviously we had to squeeze every ounce of us out to get this far, you know, yourself.
How did they make the decision that it'd be your dad that had come and your mom would stay back in Vietnam?
I think my dad was always the big decision maker of the family. And he, my mom's actually said no initially at the start. My dad says, well, if you don't like it, you're not supporting, I'm still going because I know this is the best decision. My dad is just a bit more of a risk taker.
Okay.
My mom is just a bit more fearful. So there's the best both worlds of both of them. So they're, look, without a risk, there's no reward, isn't it? That's what he have always taught us.
And like, do you remember getting on the plane? Are your memories that vivid of it? Do you remember, you know, leaving your mom, leaving your brother?
No, I just remember taking my socks off.
I remember.
Two?
No, not at two.
I went
4 years after Tam.
Yeah.
So I was six. And I think Tammy was six when she left. I remembered we were in the airport. My granny was crying.
Yeah.
You know,
Tammy was crying as well.
Yeah.
Everybody was crying because you're just like, what's going on?
And then you don't really know. You're just like, I'll see you after. I'll see you later, that type of thing. I'll see you next year. I'll see you whenever. But like on the airplane, me and my mom, no English.
I was getting sick.
Yeah. Like,
were you
parching and then sick?
Yeah. Oh, I was like about to get sick because I've never been, you know, like airplane, the motion.
Mm.
And I was like, getting sick. And my dad was like, oh my God, she's about to get sick. So he had to call the air hostess and was pointing at, like, language barrier. You don't know. And food, we couldn't eat the food. We didn't know how to work the TV.
Yeah.
It was just mad.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I remember I was parching water and we didn't know how to, like. So then the woman, what's it called? The woman that.
The air hostess.
Yeah. my mom was just pointing at my tongue. And then another guy asked for water and then she just pointed at water. That, for example, we were just like, had no clue about anything. Funny enough, we almost missed our Dublin transit because it was at that time, the airplane would go to Dublin, then it would go to US, all a part of the same flight, that type of thing. You still have that flight sometimes now.
Yeah.
But we didn't know if we were to get off or not. Until we were one of the very last to get out. Because me and my mom wouldn't know any better, right? So yeah, we were one of to get out. We were one of the very last to get out of the Dublin flight.
So you nearly just kept going?
Yeah, we nearly kept going, that type of thing. It's all coming back now, just speaking about that. But yeah, that's super funny to look back. But at the time, you're like, what is going on here, right? Yeah.
And during those 4 years then, when you and your dad are here, did you have much contact with Vietnam?
No. I would send her letters.
Okay.
I don't know if she received them or not. I think I wrote a letter like, nearly every day, even. Think about it now, Jesus. Sorry. But it was like, I just missed her so much. Like,
of course.
But you can't talk to her. You can't ring her.
Can't FaceTime.
It's
not as easy, right?
It's just by memory. Now thinking it back, I'm like, oh my God, how did I even get through this, boss? Sorry, I'm starting back there again, boss. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Firstly, that heartbreak of leaving your mother, but then coming to literally a whole new world, as you say, you haven't seen a white person before, and suddenly you're where? Straight to Cavan.
Yeah, like everything was just very a vivid memory of a blur, but I just remember just pure sadness. That was this. Pure sadness.
What's your relationship like with your dad during that period? I'm
very close with my dad. It was just myself and my dad all the time.
There's no anger that, you know, you've been dragged away or anything like that?
No, absolutely not.
You understood, even at that age.
My dad said something, we all would listen. That's just how the way it is. And if my dad said this, we would listen. But we know at the end of the day that he has always reminded us that, like, we're doing something good here. Just trust what God has given you, basically, you know? And, yeah. I wouldn't regret one thing in my life. If I hadn't made that decision, I would have never been here where I am right now. If I hadn't went through that tough and sad time of my life, I would never be this person, like, having this serious, serious determination to this day.
Is there many families still back in Vietnam?
Everybody.
Yeah,
everybody.
A good 90%.
Yeah.
90%. Is there a relationship with them? Have you been back?
Yeah.
Yes.
We have been back. I think the more time we get back, the relationship gets better. Like I left when I was 6. I didn't come back to Vietnam since I was 17. So that's 11 years not seeing my home village, not seeing my grannies, not seeing anyone. Just kind of small chit-chat through the phone, that type of thing. So yeah, and I've been back a lot more since then. You know, I understood when you get older, you need to kind of go back to your roots and understand why and understand how things work. How the whole family kind of works.
What's that experience been like? How different is the Irish traditional family culture to the Vietnamese family?
Irish, I think, really, really orientated Irish, and whoever's family orientated, they're always very similar because they live for their family. But the Vietnamese culture is food and a bit of family gathering, home. The male would drink, the men would drink, not the women. And the women would cook, pack the food, very traditional.
Very traditional.
And then they would eat all day, the whole family would eat, but then all the sisters or the women would have to clean up after, and the men just sit there. Yeah. But in the Irish culture, obviously everyone would do everything at the same time. If you're meeting up for a weekend, you'd go out for food, or there's a bit of like, cocktails or drinks involved, and then you might go home. Or if whoever you're going to this certain person's house, you'd have a few drinks and have the laugh. And obviously it's a mutual, it's like a 50-50 off, where it's very different to Vietnam, where we would have to kind of mostly be like the woman of the house more.
And that's still in place?
Kind of, yeah.
From where we came from. Yeah. From where we came from, like another one would be marriage, very young. Having family.
Yeah,
very
that's
young.
Normal to me. Like when I said I want to get married young,
we
were like 21.
Okay, which in Ireland now would be very young,
yeah.
Very young. My parents were 18.
Okay.
That type of thing.
I thought that I was a bit late.
I'm very old compared to in our family.
Was it quite a rural area?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very.
An hour, an hour and a half away from the city, Hanoi.
Okay.
Not much. I think when did we come back last? April this year? The whole family, that's the first time ever our family came back together in Vietnam since we left. So that was Tammy is getting very emotional.
No, I'm actually not. I'm done over that. Yeah. It's just when I
touched on that little girl part.
Yeah.
Something inside me just always trigger. Yeah. And I don't think I've properly healed from that yet. But I think that will take time, you know. But that was the first time ever we had like a little meal together. How many years?
In Vietnam, 14,
together.
Together, yeah.
It was always like myself or my mom would go or one person or
never,
one person.
Never the four of you
never
went.
Sat four together.
Of us and her kids and her husband and then my missus. So yeah, it was, to be honest, it was just, looking back now, we needed that. I think we really needed that as a family.
It was great after Paris. Was it Paris or before?
Before Paris. It was before. It was kind of like a reset before Paris until I go training mode or focus onto Paris. But yeah.
It must be a wild experience for your parents going back with their kids, with their grandkids. You know, their son is going to the Olympics in a couple of months' time to be back where it all started.
Yeah, it definitely brings, and you know, for me anyways, it brings a lot more appreciativeness or gratefulness.
More humble and grounded,
for sure, because
to go back
and to be honest, we have so much more than we had before. So just to see the roots and see everyone again, it's just, you know, it's very uplifting. That gives you this extra, for me anyways, and definitely for Tammy, gives you that extra drive, you know. We come all this way, this far. We can go even more.
I send my kids back.
Yeah.
So my mom would go back to Vietnam, and every time my mom would go back, I would send my kids back.
So they get that bit of the culture.
So they understand exactly where I come from, how life actually works, how it's not the best of the best of everything. You're wearing flip-flops and you're wearing the most, like, you know, outdated clothes. But everyone,
I don't think
so
the kids understand that
now,
but I hope it's, you know, probably Mark and Lily, her
but
kids
they do understand
back.
a little bit because we were in France, and back in Vietnam, the market is just like, you know, like the open markets. You don't really see over here in Europe a lot. So we were over in Paris, and baby Mark, he's only three. He's there walking, and there was a man across the road selling fruit. He points to him and goes, look, oh, ma'am, look, Vietnam. So he understands some parts of it. That's like there's a Vietnam culture and there's an Irish culture. So hopefully they understand where we come from.
And going back in the understanding of how your life could have been if you had stayed in Vietnam and if your father hadn't taken that massive risk to come to Ireland, I'm sure you've probably got cousins of a similar age. Like, have things improved considerably in Vietnam since you were there? Would you have had more opportunities if you had stayed? No.
No.
I think now, yes. Now, 2024, yes. Mm. But at the time, 2006, 2007, 2008,
we would have just been... your average, you know,
local markets, going to the markets, selling your fruit and veg.
My mom was selling clothes.
My dad would work like these constructions, that type of thing. Just like 20 man building a foundation to a shop or a foundation to some sort of a building. My dad would be, and I probably would follow that into that route.
The route that your parents took, obviously a lot of Irish people through the centuries have gone different ways to America, to Australia. When you talk to sort of second generation Irish, they go sort of different ways. Some always stay fully ingrained in the Irish culture, and their friends in America would be second generation Irish as well, and they always want to keep that connection. Others would fully dive into the society over there, and you'd barely even know that they had that Irish heritage. What's your parents' relationship with Vietnam?
Oh, still very...
very
traditional.
Much traditional.
So if I walked into your house...
It's Vietnamese. Okay. Yeah. Oh, my house, not so. But her house, yes. She tries to keep it like very... even the way she lives or her food is still the same.
I did see a video, one of the ones you did before the Olympics, where she was making a traditional Vietnamese dinner for y'all. And I wasn't sure if this was just because the cameras were there, that there was about eight different courses, or whether this was every day.
No, this is normal. Yeah, most days.
Yeah. That's most days. Yeah. And we try to eat as much as we can together. To be honest, I go over to the house because I know when Nat's home, I get fed. When I get fed, there's always nice food on the table because he's the athlete. And my mom always makes sure there's food, fruit, everything for him. So I know when he's home, I'm like, right, I don't have to make a lunch today. I just go over, eat what he eats.
The golden child.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
I've no problem. I don't have to cook sometimes, so I just go over and eat whatever he's eating.
Yeah. The settling then in Ireland, for you coming over first and with all that stuff going on internally of trying to deal with that amount of change and the missing your mom and all that, how are those first few years?
Tough. I'd say, honestly, hands on my heart, it was probably the toughest times of my life. Toughest. Like, when I said it was tough, it was lonely, it was sad, it was just tough in general. Like, for a 6-7-year-old girl to go through that, I couldn't even imagine. I hear people move into Australia and they feel really alone and they come back. But imagine trying to go through all that when you're six.
Yeah.
Or six, when you're a child, you're supposed to feel like, you know, like pure happiness or excitement. But I never had that. But I would never regret it. I wouldn't be like, why did you do that to me? I wouldn't.
Because of the opportunities it's given you since?
Absolutely. Look, the opportunities that's given to me, but I had to work hard for it. Mm. We had to work hard for it to get to where we are. It wasn't handed over. We have no contacts here in Ireland. So we just had to work hard every single day to make sure our name is out there. And obviously it did turn out to be the better.
That work ethic, is it just in the family? Was it always there with your dad? Your mom back in Vietnam? It was just a natural thing?
1,000%, I think it's just more of a Vietnamese culture.
Right.
People over there work hard, harder than us.
Mm.
Like, my nanny back there would work like 364 days. The only day she would take off is the New Year day, and then she would go back to work there again. That's the normal.
And what's she doing?
She would be selling like a little bit of food that she would make at the side of the road.
Sells like noodles.
Yeah.
Or sells like
this rice pot.
Sticky
thing.
Rice.
Yeah.
There you go. Sticky
and
rice.
She would make it home from 5 o'clock in the morning. She goes to sleep at 11, wakes up at 2. Sorry, it's 2-3 in the morning. She leaves at 5, drives to Hanoi about 1 hour, sells it, then comes home, and then repeat that 364 days a year. So we think we work hard, not compared to the amount of like
that's just the norm over there. People would wake up 2-3 in the morning to get ready to go to the market and sell, because market actually opens at 5 or 6 a.m. that type of thing, and it closes at 11 or 12, because they can't open later because the sun is out. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So it's actually way too hot to sell some. So everything happens when before sunrise, is out.
Yeah.
If you and they go sleep super early, so it's just bringing back the, I guess.
Bringing back the day.
They're bringing back the day. They have to start earlier.
Yeah.
I guess that just makes...
That's just the normal for us.
That's the normal.
We know how to work, and if we've no problem of working. That's, I don't know,
well,
maybe...
it's clear, I think, from the success you've had.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. To be honest, you said success. Me, personally, I still don't think... I don't think I'm as successful as people say or in these interviews. I really think... I believe we can go more, but, you know, deep down inside, I still don't think that I'm that successful. I'm that, you know.
Well, that's interesting, because we've sort of, I think, changed.
For me anyways.
We've probably changed our commentary around, say, the Olympics, where there is often such a focus on medals that now I think there's an understanding amongst people who watch the Olympics of actually getting there in itself is just such an incredible achievement, as both of you know in different ways. But You sound like you're past the bit of getting to the Olympics is the achievement that you want more.
Yeah, I feel that's the mindset I have to have for me to create more expectation, more tunnels, but for me to have
more growth,
more potential to go somewhere. If I was super happy to be able to go to my first one, I was over the moon, that type of thing. To be honest, you would lose that drive and lose that. So I feel it's for me, it's a mindset thing, because I know if I get too overwhelmed with it, it will actually bring me down.
Okay.
That's me just knowing myself. So I like to kind of stay level-headed and like to stay baseline, quite level-headed. I know where I'm at. Super great. I'm so grateful to have such great people beside me. In my life to support me, let's go more. Let's why not? You only what's the quote? I heard the quote was really nice. I would like
you
to say.
You only live once?
No. It's like you only come this way to not only go this way. You only come this far and not go. Not to only go this far.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So you don't want to stop. Make,
yeah, why?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Mm. You stopped and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's it. And if I was to say that, Tammy would smack me or something. Tammy would kind of give me a wake-up call, do you know what I mean?
What are you doing?
So what, when you arrive over then, 4 years later, what's the relationship like? Are you very competitive with each other? Or are you very much the senior member of the relationship and you're keeping him in check? And
in Vietnam, if you're the older sister or the older brother or whatever, you always have to look after your younger sibling all the time.
Mm.
Regardless in whatever, like, wherever you are, it's just drilled into us that you have to look after your younger sibling. So even if I didn't want to bring him to training, and I'm sorry to say this, I hated bringing you to training and collecting you, I had to do it because my mom said so.
Yeah, it was...
Like, we're terrified still of our mom and dad because it's all about respect.
Yeah.
But if my mom says, finish school, go collect him, get two buses there, bring him home. Two buses back would be like traveling from Santry all the way to the south side, Kimnich, two buses and bringing him back. And
what age are you?
I was 11, 12 and I was collecting him.
Yeah.
And even if I didn't want to, I had to do it again because I was older sister. But I always looked out for Nat because he was always like, he's always my younger brother, even till this day. Like, I'm still protective over him. Probably a bit too much sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit too much sometimes. But, you know, I look at it like, you know, I have a great family. You know, they sacrifice so much.
A lot of people in your corner.
Yeah. A lot of people in my corner. It gives me a lot more incentive, I guess, when to go abroad, when to make the name, our family name, more well known. So, yeah, super. I guess I was just given that. Like, I hadn't. When I came over to Ireland, it wasn't as tough as Tammy here, being alone in the house when you're 4, 5, 6 by yourself. Like, no, like, absolutely nothing. That, for me, I've only came to realise that about Tammy, how hard she had it. When me in Vietnam at that time, my mom was spoiling me with everything. Like, I would have, like, three different breakfasts before I went to school and that. So that gives me so much more, I can relate to Tammy a lot more. I can understand her pain. I can understand her struggles, which all comes now. You know, it comes. She uses that.
You're more mature, though.
Yeah, she uses that.
Because you're actually growing, I think. Yeah. You're just getting older. You actually understand a bit more. Yeah. Where I don't think, maybe because you were so focused on badminton before, that you don't really understand about the outside of life. But now you understand so much more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For sure. That's understanding that for me it helps me to actually grow my badminton game even more. That's the stability outside of the court and how you manage everything outside the court. If I can manage that well, I've realized the past couple of months my on court and my training, my thing is way more productive in that way, that you're just more clear. It's like my coaches before always said, how you do badminton is exactly how you would do outside life. How you approach it, it's exactly how you would approach life. Do you know what I mean? And vice versa. So it has a lot of correlations. What's the word?
Yeah, commonalities.
In the two similarities that I can bring into, you know, the outside world. Whenever my career, touch wood, there's no bad injury. Whenever.
Well, you broke your toe.
I'm dealing with that at the moment.
Does that count as a bad injury?
Sandals right now.
Which toe did you break?
The fifth one, the pinky one.
You broke your little toe?
Yeah, so I was in India 2 weeks ago and kind of half jet lagged. The night before I played my game, I smashed it at a corner of my bed. And the beds are in the air, they're like wooden and it's just rock solid. Like, I didn't think much of it. I put some painkiller gel on it. But when I woke up the next morning, I was like, this is dust. I still played. I played my first game. I won. I don't know how. I'm not allowed to swear, right?
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, a load of painkillers.
Yeah.
And the second game, it was way too painful. I made it a lot worse, and then the painkillers didn't really work. So, yeah, now we're still recovering two and a half weeks after it.
How does that phone call go when you're ringing home then, and you know, you're over in India competing, and there's a bit of expectation on you from the family, and I've had to pull out because I hurt me baby toe.
No, I didn't
toe.
Pull out. I played, okay, like,
you
played, you know.
But you just couldn't perform.
Well, I rung home after the first game. I was like, yeah, my toe is broken. I'm
I remember he said, I got it, like, we have a family group chat, and he was sending a picture of his toe, and it was like purple. I was like, ew.
Yeah, so like my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, he's a PT, and he would kind of know how these things works. He was like, yeah, there's not much you can do. Like, there's me ringing everyone there is to how to fix this within less than 12 hours. I have to play in 12 hours, that type of thing. So yeah, nothing much you can do because there's no circulation to the...
Socks the furthest, and sandals, yeah, in an interior.
There's no circulation to the smallest toe. Furthest part away from the body, so...
I'm doing it a disservice, I apologise. How long till you're back, fully fit?
How long am I back? I'm doing a little bit of training, a little bit of moving now, but there's some movement that it's not possible for me to do yet. It's still very hard to put on a shoe. That's how sore it gets.
Right.
So,
I think it takes about a year.
No.
I sprained my thumb here.
Yeah.
It took about a year until I got the full range in it. Okay. Sorry, I shouldn't have already said that.
So the doctor said I would feel it for 1 or 2 months, but after 2 or 3 weeks, it would heal.
Okay.
But you would still kind of feel a slight pain on it. But yeah,
well,
it's only the fifth.
Well, your sister said a year, so God help you.
Let's see if I'm bright or not.
I'm a little bit more optimistic than that.
The way you talk about your career, I'm wondering, is it very reflective then of your personalities, how you approach your sport? You know, you get married young, you have kids young, you've seem to have a lot going on all of the time, maybe a bit more balance, a bit more real world, whereas you're sort of fully focused on the sport the whole way through. Did you have a period when you're getting into weightlifting and it's becoming more competitive where it's the only thing in your life that matters? Or did you always have?
Yes, a little bit. That was kind of about in my teenage years when I was really getting involved in the sport and I was doing everything I can for weight training, but then for weightlifting. And then after a while, I just, because Nat gets funded, and obviously he's in a type of federation that's, you know, gets high performance and everything
supports more
of him. We didn't. So I just made the balls move to leave it. Again, I said, like, if it's not really giving me later on in life exactly what I want to do, paying me a wage, then how can I survive on this, basically?
You did do the more dream scenario as well, where you, I think when Nat went to Tokyo, you know, spoken quite publicly of you wanted to go to Paris as well. Allowed yourself to follow that dream.
Of course, because I believe that if you don't say it out loud, how are things supposed to happen? Mm. If you don't tell people you want to do it, how are they going to believe you? Might at the start, when I say things, people are like, yeah, she's a bit like, how the hell is she going to make it? But again, in the life of business or in anywhere in aspects in life, it all starts with a thought. And it starts with a thought, then you have to make plans, and then it obviously becomes real. But if you don't talk and speak that thought out and let people know, how is it going to happen? It might, off chance, hear off there, or somebody might hear it, they might try to help you in such and such way. But at the start of it, you would really, really have so much like belief and self-belief in yourself to get yourself far first to get there.
And when you look at the people who did qualify for the Olympics in weightlifting and you look at the resources or lack of resources that, say, were available to weightlifters in this country, is it a frustration that if there was more funding, if there were better facilities, if there was
more
coaching, that you could have done this and that you're a victim of circumstance as much as anything else?
I wouldn't say I'm a victim. I would do with what I would have. I'm a smart girl. I ended up hiring my own coach, not really knowing what I was getting myself into. Was lucky and blessed enough I found a weightlifting coach through Nat's coach, a Malaysian coach. I was just a bit more, you know, again, same like my dad, maybe I got his traits. I was just a bit more fearless. I went in and I created my own system. I didn't let that affect me in a way that's like, right, okay, instead of other people having all different sources, I'll do myself. That's just me.
Mm.
You get me? That's just who I am. So
that's you having to do that, whereas the people you're competing with aren't having to think like that.
No, mm-hmm. no, they don't have to think like that. In fact, they're given all, like, obviously exactly the same thing as Nat is given now, but they are given accommodation there as well and a wage. I didn't. I say this to a lot of weightlifters, other countries out there, and they think I'm, like, crazy. They're like, what? You don't even get paid? I'm like, no. I genuinely only did this not because of the love of sport. And I had only one reason only, was to walk on that opening ceremony with my brother. He does not understand on what the actual meaning behind it. I think it goes a bit more deeper to me because I think from watching him growing up and having a dream with him when I was in my teenage years and seeing him walking out the opening ceremony, it was a lot more. It wasn't to lift on the stage to be, yeah, I would have loved him to be the first female, but it wasn't to lift on the stage. All I wanted to walk into the opening ceremony with my brother, even if Team Ireland just gave me a uniform to walk out, I'd be happy because that was the dream that I had.
Yeah.
But in order, I had to obviously achieve that and I had to be like earn to get myself on the team, you know? So, yeah, I went.
And you almost did.
Nearly.
Was there a day where you knew it wasn't happening, or was it a slow ebbing away of
I was strong, but time was on my hands. Strength just doesn't come like in a space of 1 year or 2 years. It takes time to build strength. I always had natural strength, but to have natural strength and technique and space, squeeze everything in the space of 2.5 years together. Like, he has built his life. Our SNC coach, we had the same SNC coach, Kieran, and he said to us, people like build their whole life to qualify for one Olympics. That was his first one in Tokyo, and he was 21. What makes you think you can squeeze 2.5 years in and try and qualify? Again, I was just basically fearless because I wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
So I just went straight deep in the deep end.
So when
skipped a lot of steps.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. When it doesn't happen then, and you're sitting down at night and you're realizing, I'm not going to walk in that opening ceremony.
Yes, because I've invested a lot of money into this.
Okay.
I invested a lot of savings into this, and myself and Mark, which is my husband, he had to sit me down because it was top 10. We were fully sure that if we hit the target of about 180, 185, that we'd get in the top 10 because we started off as that. Qualification has changed this time around. People bet their own top. So it's like, it's top 10 in the world for Nat and Nat only. You get me? In the men's singles. And there's so many people. There is like 60 people trying to get into that top 10. People drop out along the way. People started off as 60 people and then we end up with 30 people. And then I ended up ranking at 20. But in a way that, like, you're trying to, they never gave us out this is the target you need to hit. It's
just
me.
Kept going higher,
it kept
higher,
going higher and higher and higher.
There was a limit to where
it was,
you could
it was
go.
No limit.
Okay.
We just kept on fighting and it came out down to the top 10. It was really, really good to watch, but it was horrible for the athlete to experience it because we were fully sure if we kind of hit this sort of number and I had potential for it. But I was hitting it in training. But when I was hitting the 185 numbers in training, I need to do on the day, and that's what my coach kept saying to me, 185 is all you need. But then when the second or third qualification, the numbers jumped to 190. I physically couldn't. And I knew when the numbers jumped to 190, everything just went crashing down. My dreams just kind of went. Remember, I was going to a really, really dark stage, like just no motivation. I was getting sick. And hiccups happen in business. What I felt, it was dark. When I said it was dark, dark place, it was exactly this time last year.
Okay, just close to Christmas.
But then I turned my life around then. I made a couple of promises to myself to turn my life around.
What'd you say?
I said, like, you can't be keep going like this. I said, like, are you going to keep on sobbing that you didn't make it? I cried for a month straight. I'm like, oh my God, Mark, what did I do? I didn't qualify. This is so embarrassing for me. I've never failed anything in my life. And I'm like, now that I got myself out there of like, oh, I wanted to make this, and now I didn't make it, does that make me look like an absolute idiot? And then I was thinking so much on what other people thought of me. And then I'm like, then it flipped around and I just said to myself, it's either you stop this now or you keep on going and you keep feeling for yourself. So my New Year's resolution was to put myself first,
okay.
put my happiness first, do what I wanted. And it was just felt really dark into the New Year. And then when I kept on saying to myself, it will get better, things will get better, weightlifting is nearly over, my financials will go back up there again, things are going to get better. I had to fully convince myself, reverse the way back around and got myself out of that hole. It was basically me getting myself out of it.
Yeah, because I get the sense from listening to you that you're probably the person that a lot of people go to when they aren't in a great space and that they can rely upon.
Yes.
So when you're the one who needs to look around, is it your family you go to? Are there other people you can speak to?
I spoke to Nas and I spoke to my dad. My dad still kind of kept me, like, telling me to keep going. But no one really, really understood of the amount of weight I felt on my shoulders, especially with trying to juggle everything.
Mm.
I just felt like nobody really understood me. And when I was talking to my coach, I don't think he understood me either. He tried to kept on saying that I should rest a bit more. I'm like, I physically can't because I have a business to look after. I don't know if you understand that, you know, and money and everything. And yeah, so I spoke, but literally it was more deep down. I had to drag myself out.
So what's that period like for the two of you then in the weeks afterwards where you've sort of made it very clear you want to walk alongside your brother at the opening ceremony and it's not going to happen? And I'm trying to think of the word that's not jealousy, but because I'm sure that's not what it is.
It's
there's
not
a
jealous,
huge pride there, but also I don't know if in a way you have to hold back your joy of going there because your sister is not alongside you.
To be honest, I try to keep my badminton and my family life. I would never bring my badminton into my family life. I think it's funny enough because Tammy's went through a tough time roughly this time last year. And for me, it was roughly middle of the year last year. I spoke to the family. You know, I was actually really struggling with my game, with myself, with everything. Everything just became, you know, a lot more, so I can relate so much to Tammy there when she's speaking about struggle of like you're digging yourself into a hole and for you to actually physically, mentally, just for you, to be honest, it's only you that can actually bring you out of that hole.
Mm.
And that's what my dad instilled into me, or put into my head, Tammy also, when I had that family meeting, this no one else that can really dig you out that hole that you think you're in or you are in or whatever, except from you, right?
Mm.
And to be honest, it's just every single day going at it, trying to just change the mindset, change this, change that. You know, maybe it's wrong, maybe the change is wrong, but at least you know, okay, this doesn't work, you can go another route, you know? So Tammy speaking like that, I can totally, totally relate to because maybe she lost herself as a person when doing the athlete life. To be honest, I think everyone goes through that. You do lose yourself because you're so ingrained.
Your identity's too tied up with your success.
Yeah, maybe for me, not being a family person, not being the best brother, not being the best son and that, because for me, not being the best human to anyone because it was just...
Just being selfish because you felt you had to be.
And I realized sport or athletes are quite selfish type of people.
Yeah, everyone's so selfish.
Yeah.
You're in it for yourself.
You're in it for yourself. So, you know, I would only speak to like a coach because I feel he could kind of help me. You know, it's that thinking. I'm not saying I'm really, really selfish, but it's that type of thinking you need to be and you have to have, right? So this, what Tammy is speaking there, digging yourself that hole, that darkness, that, you know, physically you're not in, but mentally you just kind of dug yourself into that. It's just not a happy place.
As well.
It's the vibes, the energy of you, you know. You're not the person that you yourself like to speak to or you would like to see, right? So that I can totally relate because ever since I spoke to the family out loud, like that, you know, I'm really going to give it my all here. Absolute all here and to do everything to change around to get my world ranking back up, blah blah blah,
kind of made a promise to yourself and your family to
you hold yourself accountable with. Because you're speaking to your family directly, to your parents. I've never spoken to my parents like that. Ask Tammy, that's the first time ever. I was like, I called my parents in, just so happened that Tammy walked through the door 10 minutes in, we were speaking, right? Then Tammy was there, you know. So yeah, that's the conversation for me. Once I had that, I held myself accountable to my words, I guess. So
I think we kind of said to you, goes, "Are you sure you can do this? Like, are you sure you can get yourself out of this?" And he goes, "I'm going to try, and I will get myself out of it." I goes, "Well, you know, you have, like, about with us is like." We call it a family meeting. It's a family meeting, you know. It's serious. It's serious that's thrown around the table. And if you say anything in the family meeting, you have to stand your ground and say it, or else we'd be like, all right, okay, enough of this stuff now.
And for me...
And what were you looking for from that meeting? Was a little 1% hoping they'd go, just give it up, just do something else? No.
I was hoping for something... to kind of ignite my deep fire inside. It's something to relit the fire that I had when I was 17, 18, 19, where I think I'm invincible, almost like Tammy, you know, taking on the...
No, I don't think I'm invincible
now. Not like
now.
That, but that's the mindset.
Yeah, of course.
But what really ignited me was my dad. So me personally saying my relation... Of course, because my dad came over to Ireland first, I didn't know much of my dad. I really think that relationship... When my dad was missing that part of my life, we really grew apart from each other. So for me, just to hear the words that my dad spoke, which was, what was it?
You can deal with.
Yeah, something along that line. But he explained that he was struggling. At that age, when he moved to Ireland with Tammy, he was 24, 25.
Mm.
24, 25. Roughly the same age. I was 23. Roughly the same age. I felt like I was digging myself into that hole. I got myself out of it. We are here now. And he said, if you can speak that out into your family, your close ones, he goes, you will get out. To be honest, when he spoke that, not saying that everything changed in my life, that literally, this was me going into that direction I felt, that literally just, little, you know, stirred me in the right way.
Maybe you need to be that age.
Maybe
you need to be
now,
that.
Speaking that. I really
need to be
needed
mature
that.
To have that conversation.
I really needed that from my father, from my dad. My mom could say, sell fish in the supermarket and she would love that.
I'm probably guilty of it here in that I'm focusing on, say, the mother-daughter relationship and you being a part. But actually, as you say, for your dad... leaving his son, and while you're getting spoiled back at home, your dad's still not there, there's no contact.
And that's one of the reasons why that's why I took up badminton. Because we lived in Belturbet. There was a big, huge wall that I would hit the shuttlecock against the wall. Not for me, no, really, not for me. For me to show my dad, I can do this. Look, you taught me how to do this. Look, I can hit it 4 or 5 times against the wall. Dad, look, I can do it 6, 7, 8 times tomorrow. Dad, look, I can hit it over the net. That's, for me, really, that's why I started badminton. That's really why.
And is that still why you play, or?
I think that's a deep inner self that when I started as a kid, that's the real reason why I started. That's the real reason, just to get, I guess, approval, get the, what is it, the satisfaction
of
my
dad.
Father.
Yeah.
My mom would always say, that's
my
all
son,
I, yeah, that's all I needed. That's all I needed as a kid. But now, for me, it's a lot more. Now, for me, it's a lot more. It has to be a lot more for me to keep going and to be, you know,
now
really.
Now we have that, though.
Really,
now we actually have a purpose.
Pushing myself to killing myself in the training, you know, pushing the limits mentally, physically, you know, all of that. So, Tammy and her relation with my mom. Me and my dad, it all kind of
we're kind of very similar,
because we missed
we were,
that
we were distant
time.
Some parts,
but if that time wasn't, if that didn't happen,
we'd never been here.
Would we be here right now?
Yeah.
To be honest, I highly doubt that. Yeah.
There's some things you're gonna have to give up in life, in order to make some things to happen. Like, does that make sense? Like, there's some sacrifice you need to make. We're still happy family. It's not as we're not.
Yeah.
We're a bit crazy as well. But
we
that's
won't
every
touch
family.
Into that.
Yeah. But that's every family.
Everything that your parents did, obviously, when you were kids, they did it for you. Like, they did it for
you. Really did it for us. And for me, growing up and seeing how Tammy treats her kids, and seeing how then you realize, oh, my mom and dad, bloody hell, gave a lot up for me and Tammy. Especially, I'm going to say for me, like, they gave up so much for me. Their time and energy was purely on making money to pay for training for me, basically.
Yeah, I had to work for in the Chinese.
Then Tammy had to work in the Chinese because they had to save money. They cannot afford to pay another employee.
Yeah.
For me to pay for some tournaments at the start, to pay some clothing, because I didn't have badminton clothes. I was, at the start, I had these pennies, 2, 3, 4 euros t-shirts. You're not allowed to wear that for like sports tournament, Irish sports tournament. I had shorts. I had barely anything, so...
Now he's sponsored by Yonex, gets now, free clothes.
Yeah, now I'm a little bit...
It's all worked out.
It kind of worked out quite okay, but yeah, at the start it was... Yeah, I'm super lucky to be able that kind of God or someone gave me these cards, dealt me these cards. Of course, gave me struggle at the start, but they dealt me that, you know... Funny enough, my girlfriend, she's mad into, like, fortune teller. Every time she would go to fortune teller and say about me, she's like, you shouldn't worry anything about me because you live, like, I'm sorry to quote this, like, the king lifestyle, you know? And then I realized, oh my God, like, really, I'm so lucky to have, I don't have to worry about anything. Like, I still live with my parents. Delighted, we're happy out. Like, everything is...
You have no worries.
I have absolutely no worries. And the missus, she goes to me, for me also, you have no worries. All you have to do is just focus what you have to do on court. You know, it just gives me that mindset.
Yeah.
It gives me so much, you know...
Peace, isn't it?
Peace and, you know... And of course, you want to win. You're killing yourself to win. It's also, if you do lose life, like, you know, if you don't make the Olympics, you know, there's a lot more. You know, I have a super supportive family at home that really, like, loves me for who I am. I know I'm not the easiest person sometimes or not the best person to be around because of the stress level on court or the whatever it is on the badminton field. But, you know, I'm super grateful for the cards that I've been dealt from the people that I've met. That's just only, you know...
Love me for you.
Yeah, like. Love me for me because I'm... To be honest, I just want to progress in that field. And, yeah, you just have to be grateful for what you have and make the most out of it. And Tammy made more of what she had. That's me just kind of growing up now, growing out of the shell of Nat, of only the badminton. Now you have Nat kind of the...
Fully rounded person.
Instagram post.
Yeah, not fully rounded person, but going along
South
that line.
Instagram.
Open my dimension. Open my, you know, my book or my chapter. Just more and more to myself. And I really feel this brings a lot more into your life. You can attract a lot more. What Tammy's saying, she talks a lot about. The laws or whatever, attraction, just how life works. You have to give and you have to give a certain amount to get, you know, that type of thing. This is how the fundamentals of law, I guess, that's how it works.
He's only experiencing it now.
I'm only experiencing it now. But, you know, when things start clicking and when you're like, this is why, then you can kind of, you know, focus the energy on the good things and the right things that works for you, or for me, for Tammy is different.
Yeah.
Then you can really point that into whatever your field is to be, whether it's badminton, whether it's post-badminton, whether it's whatever, family life, kids, you know. that's a little bit more insight about myself and my development throughout true sport. This is true sport. Tammy had it completely... opposite.
Reverse.
Yeah, yeah.
And me is
real life first.
Yeah, real life first. Now is sport for me into real life.
Yeah.
So it's, to be honest, I think that's brought me and Tammy a lot closer recently, right? A lot closer. I realize how much Tammy has put into me, when I haven't been the best brother. We fell out a few times, we've had talks. Me being so naive, so badminton focused, I didn't know I was being a bad brother. I didn't know I was being, I could have been more supportive. I could have been a lot more supportive. I could have been, but to be honest, I don't know if that could have been helped Tammy.
Yeah.
or not, because she's the type of person that she can herself can do it alone. I don't know if my support or my dad's support or my mom's support could really help her. I think she needs that friction between us to really, she needs that confliction between us or between anything to excel herself into the next
We don't
level.
Hate each other.
No,
I don't think that's coming up.
This is very in-depth.
Yeah, we've never spoken about
this is me going quite in-depth.
Yeah. I definitely think you're just coming out off because while you were in bad of a situation there, you had zero purpose in life. Your life was just badminton. So we were trying to explain to him there was so much more in life than just badminton. But he can't really understand it because he was brought up as being a badminton player, where I understood all the qualities of life, then I couldn't handle the part. Couldn't handle being an athlete because to juggle everything, where he was just in that zone straight away. But now when he had no purpose anymore, there was no fire lit inside him. So he had to try to find a purpose. Now he has a purpose and now he's starting to really understand the good quality of life, having supporters, having this and that. I remember I was saying nasty people being out there. He hasn't really experienced that. So you'll have another interview coming when I experienced that.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think you're just blossoming into your full adult life now.
Yeah.
That's what I truly believe. And your game has gotten so much better.
I felt so.
You have a purpose behind this.
It's improving. Going in in the right direction. I thought I could go a bit younger age, you know, excelled a bit quicker. But, you know, this is how the cards are dealt. I'm not gonna focus on the past and be caught up in the past.
Okay.
You know, life moves on. This too shall pass, that type of thing. So, yeah,
on to the next one. What's next for you, Tammy?
Yeah. What is next? To be honest, we drove here and, like, to be honest, within, like, 45 minutes, she told me, so many things.
I don't like to stop being here. I am here. I see myself as, right, I'm on, moving on to the next. I might become, like, whatever in weightlifting, but I do want to be I want to be a TV presenter.
Okay.
I want to be one of the first Vietnamese and Irish TV presenter out there. You have to have big goals for yourself and say who you are and what you want to do, isn't it? So this is, I feel like, the start of my weightlifting journey, but in that media presenting journey. So there, I want to expand more businesses. And yeah, I just want to be better myself every single day. You might see me in a show or something like that. I don't know. Maybe hopefully someone sees me and they're like, I like her.
You just swap seats here and
I'll interview you next or something. But
I don't think I'll be as interesting on the other side though, is the problem.
But I definitely 1000%. I feel like whenever I speak to people, a lot of people can relate to me. So I could probably get the best out of people. And sometimes being behind the camera, behind the mic itself, that you can actually relate to more. You can get the best out of people. I feel like I love talking. So maybe that's my next thing. I'm really, really am trying to break into that media world there right now. It is quite hard and it is very, very tough. But I'm willing to work hard for it.
Well, listen, if we can give you a hand here and off the ball, we can have a chat off air.
Let's shout chat out after.
you definitely strike me almost as one of the lucky ones coming out of elite sport in that you have so much other stuff going on and such a real focus that as important as weightlifting has been to you, actually you're able to transfer that focus and importance to other things quite quickly. Whereas I think an awful lot of sports people, you know, you probably touched on it, Nat, you were in that, have been in that position, really struggled with that change.
Yeah. And again, it comes down to that inner girl when I was 6. A lot of no's was given to me, a lot of rejection. It's no problem, I'll stand back up there again, but I'll stand back up 10 times better than I was before. Sometimes I actually work better off rejection. I had a couple of rejections back there and that probably builds me and made me. So I don't like standing still. Like if you want to have a look at my weekly schedule, it's crazy. But that's just me trying to better myself every single day. If I have some sort of income or something to invest, I'll fully invest into that. I'm always looking for the next adventure. Again, because I'm still in my 20s. I see this quote all the time. In your 20s, you make all the mistakes you want. Do what you want in business. Do what you want in life. In your 30s, you'll calm down a bit more. So I'm here just still going away, making like any mistakes as I could, having all the rejections, no problem. But I'll get there one day, hopefully.
And for you, Nat, 2025, once we get over that broken toe, what are the big events? What are the things to look out for this year?
Yeah, for me anyways, I try not, you know, a few interviews to start talking about LA before with me. I'm like, to be honest, I'm just taking it one day at a time. Right now I'm dealing with my toe, so one day at a time, really it's, and that's what I'm kind of incorporating into what I do in badminton, focusing one point at a time, one rally at a time, one time, just what I have to do next. And for me, what I have to do next is recover this toe, get myself in good shape, have some competition and training camps in January in Asia. So yeah, that's the next goal for me, you know, not look too far, try to be, you know, just try to keep the goals quite small. If it's too far away, it's very difficult for me to speak about LA, for example. We have Europeans in April, to be honest. I'm not so really worried thinking about that, April in 2025. But I'm really focused on what I have to do in the end of December, which is recover this, spend some time with my family, quality time with my family, you know, just making the most of that for these 1-2 weeks when I actually have off, because Tammy probably knows I'm away like 6-7 months of the year.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
When we received the email, I was like, the only day is today.
Yeah.
And that is all.
Yeah. And it took us two months to practice.
So you're over home for dinner every day now, are you, while he's back?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh,
yeah,
yes. Much. Lunch, dinner, everything. Yeah.
The best of everything.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, right now for me, it's just improving myself. Again, similar love to Tammy every single day, but it's towards the... me as a person also, and towards my sporting ambitions.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very similar, the way Tammy is speaking, super similar. Everything is quite similar, but I guess we just point it at different passions.
He said to me, did I show you this parking place? Because I always park at this spot. I was like, no, I always park here.
Yeah.
So like we ended up like, we're like, oh my God, we're actually two alike.
It's like on top of St. William Street, there's a little road where mostly it's always free. And I used to get my chirotherapy there, and
I
would always park there because I know it's always free, and it's a little walk into like whenever. So I was like, okay, this is quite strange here. It's just very strange, and we wore like the same colored jacket.
Some sort of a.
And to be honest, I was gonna wear this color today, but I just had a feeling that let's just change it up. Wear your black jeans because I was gonna wear kind of creamy today. So I quite like that. It kind of suits, I think, our
subconsciously
skin.
Almost like twins.
Yes.
I guess so.
Kind of. We're the same spot.
Almost, yeah. Yeah. Almost, yeah.
We're starting to get to know each other.
We and family
more.
Listen, thanks so much for coming
in
and being so incredibly honest. The very best of luck with everything that you're doing on court, off court, all of that. The Nguyen, is that that's definitely Nguyen. The correct
Nguyen?
Nguyen.
And
obviously, we'll have a chat off air then about where the golf comes into your name as well, Tammy. But. Tam, thanks so much.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Settle in.
On Off the Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.